Hey everyone, Kirk here with 48 Hour Heroes. I am here once again with my dear friend and producer.
Hi everybody, Indra here. Good to be here again.
And today we are going to be talking about three of my favoritest of all time Seattle 48 Hour film project filmmakers, the Sewanchot brothers, Note, Nuke, and Nut. And I really wanted to talk to them because they encapsulate a lot of what the 48 is really all about. Professional development, community building, and just a crap load of fun on top of it all. And you had the great fortune to meet them at Filmapalooza last year.
I did. And it was fun because you told me so much about them. And of course, I've seen, you know, their film and we've been talking about them. So yeah, it was great fun to meet them. I was very busy, so I didn't get to spend too much time with them. So, but I've heard a little birdie telling me they'll be joining us this year as well.
They will be joining us again at Filmapalooza in Los Angeles because they were one of the top three films in San Francisco this year.
Yes.
And they decided to participate in the Yes We Can competition, and they made the cut out of those.
That's brilliant. So, boys, if you're listening, beer's on me. We'll have a proper chat to get to know each other a little bit.
Yeah. The reason I interviewed them is because A, I really, really like them, but they do encapsulate so much of what the 48 is about. They started out as hobbyists with a crazy off-brand point-and-shoot video camera. And you look at their work now, they're completely 140%. 148% professionals.
And so cool.
They've become, when I get asked for referrals for, hey, you know, we need a camera team, I'm like, all right, go talk to Nuke and Nut. Yeah, we need a director for something, talk to Note. And they've been doing it, I think, since 2011. We can't really archaeologically date the first year they did it, but based off of the conversation, I believe it was 2011 because that was a notable year because cheese was the prop and there was a film that had so much vomiting.
Their
film. It wasn't their film, but I'll track down the film and send it to you. I don't think the judges gave it the credit it deserved. it was a play. The play on the genre was so good.
You do a lot of food stuffs. For your props.
Not recently.
I'm just saying, like, bread, wasn't it bread last time?
Bread. Yeah. I don't do anything that's juicy or fleshy anymore. Had some bad experiences in the horror. Like, one year I couldn't eat oranges for a long time. Avocados were ruined for me for a little bit. Oh,
that's terrible. Very funny, though.
But I figured bread would be kind of safe.
Yeah, you'd think.
Until people start asking what constitutes a loaf of bread. And I mean, the questions were crazy.
Don't they always do that? I mean, I had a cinema ticket the other competition. Cinema ticket doesn't get more clear than that. Could it also be a concert ticket? No. Because it's not a cinema ticket. Can it be a ticket to a football match? No. So they will always try, and I love them for it because it's also part of the game, right? But they will always try to kind of live on the edge with all the required elements for that matter.
Yeah. The prop is always the most problematic. Oh, the character too. The character can be quite problematic.
Yeah.
But well, and to get back to the Sewanchot brothers, another reason I love them is they really adhere to the spirit of the competition. Not just the letter of the law, but the spirit of it. They frequently shoot in the same location. They work with a lot of the same people that they've kind of grown as a community out of this. And as a result, they've gotten a couple of Best Actor awards out of it, Best Cinematography, and you know, Best in City in 2021. And yeah, I just love the guys. I really think they embrace everything that this event stands for.
Right. And I think it's so cool that you teams like that, that, you know, do it for such a long time, that you as a city producer can see the growth, you know, in their films and use that growth to ultimately propel, you know, a career in the industry.
Exactly. And they're all working professionally. It's what they do. Well, without further ado, why don't we get to it? Let's talk to Newt Note and Nook Sawanchout.
48 hours to go. If you're looking for a hero, then this is the show. Where did they come from? What do they know? It's an origin story. Let's go.
All right, welcome to this week's episode of 48 Hour Heroes. My guests today, I have multiple guests, and I'm very excited to talk with them because I think they really embody what the 48 Hour Film Project is all about. It's Note, Nook, and Nut Sawanchout, the 2021 winners of the Seattle 48 Hour Film Project. Welcome, guys.
Hello.
Hello,
everyone.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. I'm really excited to have you on, because I say it in all sincerity that I think you three really do embody a lot of what the 48 is all about. How long have you been doing it?
Nook and I started the 48 together in 2013. That was our first 48. I think we did every year, except there is one year that we didn't do it. Yeah.
That's
so 2013, I remember. Yeah. 2013, I think 2013 was the first year, I'm pretty sure. Yeah. 2013. Yeah. 2013.
Well,
2013, 2012, I have to double check.
What was the first prop you remember? I think I can pinpoint it based off of prop.
I think I know it was cheese. I'm pretty sure.
The cheese, yeah. The cheese plate.
Oh, yeah. The cheese.
Remember that?
What? That was 2011.
No. That was definitely 2000.
Was it 2011 was the cheese, yeah.
Cheese.
Oh, wow.
Are we allowed to just say the title of this film?
Of course.
It was Marina, right? Yeah. That was, and it was about like these group of misfit kids like trying to fight the zombie apocalypse type of thing. And it was and then there was like a sister-sister like bonding, like part of the story was developing with sister-sister bonding.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Okay.
In a while. Yeah.
Vaguely remembered. It was a long time ago. That was 2011. Because 2012, the traffic cone was the prop.
Oh, yeah. That sounds familiar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember that. Because that was, I think, one of the most creatively used props ever in the Seattle 48 generally was the traffic cone. I thought there were so many interesting uses of it. So you're 10, 11 years into the 48, and I mean, that's a lot of years.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
What drew you to the event in the first place? How did you hear about it? And, you know, what was it that attracted you to it?
Do you remember? It's been a while.
You know, it literally has been a while. But, you know, at the same time, we were always filming no matter what. We were always filming something, even if there was no deadline, no goal in mind. We were always filming. Ever since we were kids, we have a blast doing it. So the 48, like I said, it's only natural that we participate because we're still filming random stuff anyways.
Yeah. I think we found an ad for it or something, too. And we're like, okay, we want to do that. It's approaching in a few months. Let's just do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so much has changed about it, even in that time.
Right.
Even between 2005 and 2011, things changed a lot. But, you know, from like 2009, when DSLRs hit the market and HD became viable, it's crazy to think back how much has changed. I mean, what kind of stuff are you? What kind of gear did you guys start out on, and what are you working with nowadays?
You mean, I think for the first 48 or just in general?
Yeah, just kind of, you know, what is the archaeological timeline of the technology you've used?
We had this point and shoot that our mom bought for us, that Nook used extensively, a Sony point and shoot that could record, I think, Nook, what was it, 8, 10 second clips?
Yeah, I abused that camera. so that
you still have the camera
record, and then it would shut off, and then I would open the battery door and close it again so it could boot up and start recording again, and that's how I do stuff.
Wow.
So
yeah, then
I think I was 11. A lot of that
a long time ago, lifetime, yeah. Then we moved on to we had an HV20, one of the first prosumer consumer 24p.
Is that the Canon, the Panasonic
camcorder, the Canon camcorder, the
oh okay
style, yeah
okay
tape, DV tape, mini DV tape. Then we got a Canon 7D, GH1, GH2, and then we moved into Blackmagic cameras, and that's where it's sort of like we diverged. I shoot only on Blackmagic cameras, and Nuke shoots, yeah, I don't want to speak for him, but Nuke, you would primarily say you do Blackmagic, Red, Sony.
Yeah, I like to jump around those.
Yeah.
They're all of them are just tools. As long as you know what you're doing, you know, make good stuff and have a blast. So that's all I need, to have a good time.
And that, what would you say you use?
You know, I just came more recently into it, but I find like the 4K Pocket 4K 6K Pro have been like a very good, like, you know, like if you can afford to put money down for like a simple lens and a simple camera, it'd be like that 4K 6K kit where you could do a lot of things with it, you know. And so I'd say that'd be most of it. But before, I remember when they would use like all the GH series, and I'd play around with it too. And then for a longest time, we did a lot of weddings with like the GH4 with a broken screen. And that was like, it was a fun thing to play around with. You know, you're like opening it up and it's like crack, crack. And then it like one day it didn't turn on and we're like, ooh, but you know, it served its purpose.
Yeah. And, today's episode brought to you by Blackmagic Design. it's amazing where technology has come to, but I love that, you know, you started off on an odd little point and shoot camera, which is, you know, a point I'm really trying to get across to filmmakers is that the camera's just a tool.
Yeah, it is.
You know, and as you grow and develop, you're going to, you know, pick up more skills and you're going to develop preferences in your tools. But at the very beginning, just using something, getting used to the whole idea is the most important thing. Would you say that that's kind of how you approached it when you were first starting out as young filmmakers?
Oh, totally. You know, whatever I can get my hands on to start recording is it. And when that camera died, I went to school, to my library in school, and like the camera department, whatever. And I was like, I need a camera that can shoot video. And that's all I need. And then they're like, oh, yeah, I don't know if you have one. And then it's crazy. Back in the day, we were already in the digital age. We weren't out using videotapes all so much. But at the time, all I said was anything that I could film, I needed. So.
Okay. So you guys started out 2011, 2012. I'll go back and check the archives and we'll figure out the exact archaeological date of the first Sawancho 48.
I love that.
And even by, you know, 2011, 2012, we were 6-7 years into the 48 in Seattle, and we had some established, well-known teams, like, you know, Team Awesome, Red Shed. Did you ever, you know, at your first screenings, did you ever feel like intimidated by the fact that, you know, there were some of these now legendary Seattle 48 teams?
I don't think we did. I think our priority going in was making amazing memories for summer and making amazing connections and making amazing friends. And so I think going in, we were just really excited to have something being shown on the screen, you know. I think that was, you know, to be able to share that experience with people that you care about and create something with, that was the number one priority. And when we saw that, we're like, this is way more amazing than we thought it would be. And that really achieved what we were hoping for, which is really just amazing memories.
Well, I got to say, it was once you guys became repeat offenders and you'd done it for a few years and I'd, you know, gotten to see you grow year by year, you know, in your talent and ambition and story craft. I think there was one year, I think it was the year, no, when you said you guys weren't going to be doing it. And I think my reaction was, oh man, it's just not a 48 without the Sawanchotes. Right. It's not a Seattle 48 hour film project without the Sawanchotes. I have a lot of great memories of you guys participating in it. And I like that now that we're getting opportunities to work together outside of the 48.
Love it.
That's been a lot of fun.
So thankful. You know, it all kind of ends up working out if you kind of see life the same way. You know, we're having a great time doing what we love, and we're, you know, artistic people creating, doing what we want to do. So it's only natural that we get a chance to work with each other, and I'm just thankful and glad we are. So
yeah,
we're lucky.
And so for years you've been hearing about Filmapalooza,
right?
You've heard me go on and on and on about it and how great it is, and this March you got to see it firsthand.
Yeah.
Tell me about your Filmapalooza experience. Did it live up to the hype that I created for it?
Yeah.
I was just saying, I had a blast, personally. I thought it was phenomenal. You know, going on an adventure with family and friends and getting to represent Seattle and, you know, you as well, which is an honor, you know, because you've been championing since Seattle for a long time. So it was an honor and we had a total blast. So it lived up and exceeded my expectations, but yeah, we all had a great time.
We really had a great time. We brought a lot of family and friends. I think that really just cemented the bonds that we created, because some of the people that we brought with us basically have been on our 48 since the beginning. And we're like, this is just insanely awesome. And so we couldn't have asked for a better time.
Yeah, I was so happy to see the entire Lightform posse at all the events. And I wish I could have had more time to hang out, but poor Wouter got COVID.
Kirk's a big man, important man. He's got stuff to do.
He tested positive at the airport and in Amsterdam, and that put a lot more burden on those of us that were involved in the planning and execution of Filmapalooza. So didn't get to hang out as much, but I'm glad that Rishi was hanging out with you guys. I felt really bad for him for winning in the year that we had a virtual Filmapalooza.
Was it he's our 2019 Best in City?
He was the 2020 winner, and the virtual Filma was 2021.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, because the 2020 Filmapalooza was in Rotterdam the first week of March 2020, which was insane. There were 500 of us, cramming into theaters, and we're just hearing all of these crazy stories about, you know, COVID coming up from Italy, and then the first cases in Washington were happening, and, you know, I flew through Seattle, Reykjavik, and Amsterdam, and public transportation all over the Netherlands. And, you know, no one got it, which is amazing, but
it's amazing. Yeah.
So yeah, to get back on point. Yeah. I was really glad that Rishi was able to come and hang out and represent Seattle, even though we didn't get an opportunity to screen his film, but it's good to see so much Seattle spirit at Filmapalooza.
I do want to say it's been great that meeting him there personally, because I've like messaged him, but I've never been able to meet him. And so that was, thank you to you. Thank you to Filmapalooza. We were able to literally shake hands, you know, and be like, hey, you know what? Hi, I'm this person and I've heard a lot about you. Right. And so, it was great to finally meet him. And then on top of that, after that, whole meeting, we've actually been doing more projects together. And so we kind of integrated him into part of one of our groups. And Kevin recently shot his own film for a film competition, and Rishi was there with us all night editing and doing. So we did an 18 hour stretch at the office of three of us editing, one special effects, one's over. Yeah. So it was great to just have him and, you know, got to meet him.
that's a huge part of the reason that I run the 48, you know, in Seattle and now Montana and San Francisco, is stories like that. I love seeing people connect and develop their creative and professional goals together. That's, to me, that's what it's all about, is people meeting people to do cool shit.
That's exactly what the 48 is.
Yeah.
Really is. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, so Seattle's coming up in, you know, a week and a half on the 15th. So how does it feel going into the 48 this year as last year's Best in City winners? Do you feel any pressure from that, or no pressure, or does it change the way you are thinking about the 48 this year?
I think it definitely changes how we're approaching this year's 48. So we registered under a different name, TriSons. And so we're sort of taking life form off of 48s. So I think I do want to give a bit of a background story. So NukeNet and I each have different production companies. And I think a lot of, there's a misconception that we work together consistently, and that's actually not true. And so when we do 48s, it's generally Nuke and I who direct, and you'll swap back and forth, but we've never co-directed anything together. The dynamic is just a little bit challenging, I think, because we're brothers. And so it's, I think, put our names on together a lot of the times just because we're siblings, all of the time there's going to be, if Nuke has an idea, you know, I'll DP for him. If I have an idea, he'll be AD or producer for me. But we never really work together in the capacity that I think a lot of people assume. Mm-hmm. And so for this year, it's 40. So if it's the light form thing, it's generally something I'm going to do, with Nuke being a producer and, a writer and amazing roles, and not helping out in various roles where he's, you know, going to fit in and he's thinking he's going to contribute a lot to. And so this 48, though, after doing it, we wanted to do something that I think went against that, because we realized that in the past, we've never worked together in the capacity that we were hoping we would, which was as a sort of sibling relationship-based team. And so this year, TriSons is our parents' company's name. So our parents run a small little custom jewelry shop, handmade, in Pike Place Market, and that's their company name. And we were hoping, so what we're trying to achieve going to this 48 is really seeing if we could do something where we just have fun with each of us contributing equally. And that's the idea. And we don't know if that's going to happen, but that's the idea, where it's like, hey, let's go in, have fun, and see how we can develop our relationship along with the relationship of our friends and family too. And that's the difference between this year's 48 and the past, where it's like, how do we figure out how can we work together basically, you know, better? Like, how do we work together in a better manner? And that's the idea going to this 48.
Excellent. That's definitely seems like a different approach from years. So I love that the 48 can provide an opportunity like that. Exactly. To say, want to change things up. We work this way normally. And, you know, it's a 2-day commitment. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. If it does, fantastic.
Right. Exactly. It's a relationship building event. Yeah. And in this one, we want to make it a familial relationship building event. And so that's what's exciting and amazing about that, because you can build relationships with friends or family or new potential, teammates. Mm-hmm. But in this case, we've done a lot of that. We wanted to internally focus, along with having an amazing group of people. So I want to discount the amazing group of people that are going to join us too, because we're also building that relationship and how their relationship just works within our community too, in the greater Seattle community.
Oh, that's great. I love the idea that there are as many ways to approach doing the 48 as there are teams participating in the 48.
Exactly.
I love seeing the films by a complete bunch of amateurs, you know, who are a family.
Exactly.
And seeing what they come up with as, you know, a fun summer event to do together. Or, you know, we've had old, you know, college buddies who haven't seen each other in years and have done it as a way to reconnect over a summer weekend. And there's so many reasons to do it that, you know, if the opportunity is afforded, why wouldn't you hop in and do it?
100% agree. Really, it really is just that. Why wouldn't you do it?
Yeah. And well, let's say, so I know, I mean, the pandemic has really messed with a lot of people, you know, emotionally, physically, creatively, professionally. It's really put the screws to a lot of people. I mean, I know that my, you know, everyday business is radically different. And Chris and I are having to rethink the way that we run the 48 in Seattle. We had to entirely rethink Missoula because that became the Montana 48 because of the digital kickoff and drop-off technology that is developed. So I what am I trying to say? So imagine there's an actor out there who wants to participate, is having a hard time finding a team. What would you, as longtime veterans of this event, say to that actor who wants to participate but doesn't quite know how to go about it?
I think the easiest, the first thing that comes to mind is really just reaching out, right? Joining different communities, the Facebook group that the Seattle 48 has, the meetups, and then just reaching out to various communities and people you might know to see, hey, they're an open team. Because like you said, the 48 is an event where you make amazing memories, but you also have the opportunity to try things that are riskier, right? Trying to see if the dynamic works. So it's really just reaching, taking that first step and not being afraid and just asking, hey, is this something I can do? Is this something I can join? Reaching out.
Chris and I always get, you know, a little frustrated because we want more attendance at the meet and greets.
Yeah.
Right.
Because even with the smaller attendance, or, you know, complete lack of attendance over 2 years, but now that we're doing them in person again, I've seen some amazing things happen at the meet and greets. Like complete strangers who 15 years ago, you know, didn't know each other. And now, you know, they've like started a business and they moved to LA or they moved to Atlanta and they now have, you know, businesses together and they met as strangers at a bar 15 years ago. You know, the getting out there and meeting people, it's very, very, very important.
Really, you know, what we were just saying about how great it is to participate in the 48 in general is it's so much fun. You know, you get to have this experience where you get to watch it with family and friends. You get to create something with people you don't know. And, you know, it's like, why not do it, right? Why wouldn't you do it? And so it's basically like, just do it. That's the 48 slogan. But really, as an actor, there's two ways about it. Whether you reach out to another team on Facebook or the website, meet and greet, or just do it yourself. You know, just do it.
Okay.
One of the things, go for it. And just with acting, with filmmaking, since we dabble a little bit of both, everything takes time. And, you know, you can't just go at it once. If you audition for a role, you know, you probably might get it or you might not. And so you have to do another audition. The 48, in a way, I think you should treat it like that. You know, maybe this year you go check it out, you participate. Okay. Next year, you do it yourself. You join, you participate, you act, and you should do it over and over and over again. Just like filmmaking, just like acting. It's not something you should be just trying out because, once again, it's an awesome time. Why wouldn't you do it?
Yeah, I always like to bring up Peter Jackson as a role model for the 48. Because if you look at the trajectory of his career, his first movie, Bad Taste, have you ever seen it?
I don't think I have.
Oh, you got to see it. It's crazy. He shot it over 5 years on a mixture of Super 8 and 16 and Super 16. And, oh, it is B-movie bonanza. It's great. And then he went on to make Dead Alive, a zombie movie that actually set a world record for the most gallons of blood per second ever in a movie. And then he made a Meet the Feebles, which was like the Muppets, but with STDs and drug problems and Vietnam flashbacks. And then he made Heavenly Creatures. And then, he made the Ghost one with Michael J. Fox, The Frighteners. Mm. And then he made The Lord of the Rings.
What's that?
I don't know, some weird little cult movie. But he started out just kind of following his passion. I want to make a horror movie at any cost.
Right.
With the tools that are available to me.
Yeah.
And he went on to make The Lord of the Rings.
Exactly.
To my satisfaction. Yeah. I mean, I adore those books. Those are some of my earliest memories. And he made them to my satisfaction, which is high mark.
Yeah.
And I think the 48 offers opportunities like that.
Can I say something, actually?
Of course.
Gareth Edwards. Mm-hmm. Gareth Edwards. Yes, Gareth Edwards. He directed Rogue One. And before that, he directed Godzilla. Mm-hmm. At that, he directed Monsters, which is a low-budget monster film. And little do most people know, before that, he won a London 48 Power Film Project. He made a sign. Yeah. And so Gareth Edwards is another great example of literally how far the 48 can take you. It's a stepping stone. If you don't, I think everyone should do it. Everyone should do it at some point in their lifetime.
Taika Waititi did one.
Yeah. Exactly. See,
Martin Freeman plays a mime in one.
Yes, I think I've seen that one. Yeah.
So yeah, that's take a gamble on yourself for once.
Really? Yeah. You know, the greatest thing about the 48 is that there's a limitation. There are a lot of limitations, and the greatest enemy of making a film is unlimited resource and just open-ended. There's no limitations, right? Without any limitation, freedom is the enemy of creativity. And so filmmaking, when you have complete freedom, you're never really going to do it. But with the 48, you have a time, a deadline, and you have constraints. And that pushes you. That allows you to take the risk, the creative risks to do it. And you know you have to turn it in. And that pushes you beyond, I think, sort of anything that you can create yourself. And that is truly something that's amazing that we always love, right? And so we love the limitation. It basically allows you to have all this creative freedom due to that. And that's just amazing.
Yeah. And seeing the broad spectrum of what people do with their genre selection and the character line of dialogue and prop, when you see them up on the big screen and go, that's a lot of crazy interpretations and uses of the required elements. And it's so fun to see how people interpret it.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. See how do people think, what direction are they going to go with, let's say, like a drama, right? You can go very many ways, or a sci-fi, It blows my mind to see the creativity that, people have that we may not be seeing so often, but everyone does have it, so it's very nice.
Yeah. Well, speaking of the screenings, as someone who rents a theater many, many blocks every year, I am eternally grateful for the amount of people that you all bring to the theater every year. Because I'm like, I don't want, it costs a lot to rent those screens. So I really appreciate how many people you bring, but also the energy that you all bring to the screening is, it's a nice like B vitamin shot for me. Because everyone's so happy and supportive. Yeah. Describe the screenings to, say, someone who hasn't been to a 48 screening.
Do you want to take that or not?
For me, it's just like, woo, we're having a blast. So I describe it, you get to watch your movie you made together with your friends and family. You're thanking us, Kirk. No, we should be thanking you, Not a lot of people. Opportunity to do that. We got to do that when we were 19, 20, thanks to you. So I'm having a blast. Everyone's having a blast. We're having, the time of our lives, honestly. It's like the highlight almost every year of many people's lives. Hey, we can't wait to get to do this together and go watch it and experience it together on a big screen TV. Well, screen.
So. Yeah, well, I'm super excited this year because this is, we've been screening at the Uptown since 2012, the first year they opened. And the Seattle International Film Festival has been the greatest partner in the world. I love them to pieces. Everyone who works there, they always treat us as the event producers very well. And they want to go out of their way to make sure that their theater is, you know, good enough, up to the standards that the audience deserves. And super, super, super excited that we have weekend screenings this year. For the first time.
Yeah,
I am so excited about that. And we won't be at the Uptown, but the Egyptian's a cool theater.
It is. Yes, it is. Hey, just because we spoiled doesn't mean we don't love it. You know? Yeah. The Uptown's great doesn't mean other TV, I mean, theater screens aren't awesome. So.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, I'm just. Yeah, weekend screenings. I've always wanted to do it, and it's never really been feasible. But like I said, SIFF has been a great partner. And this year, we're going to be able to offer festival passes.
Oh, fun. Wow.
So you can buy, you know, a pass for a day.
Nice.
Or you can buy a pass for the weekend. You know, it's I'm so excited to, you know, have those offers. So, all right. We're coming up on time here. So I would like to ask each of you an individual story, quick story. What is the craziest, weirdest, scariest, most amazing thing that has happened on a 48-hour set for each of you?
Mm. It's great because I think it's great because each of us sort of have directed their own 48, you know, Nut did his own 48 a few years back. Dark form.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, that
for horror. That, yeah.
There are a few horrors too. Nukes and Power ones. I need time to think. Maybe one of you guys have a story first.
Yeah.
I can start off this one because it's been a very prominent story in like my 48 experience. So this was actually Project Overlook. And so I remember Project Overlook was a great day. We filmed all day, but I couldn't be there at night because I made plans. You see, it's our, it was our college friends, I think like birthday party, right? And so it was, you know, we're here kind of in Kent filming and this party was all the way in, I think, I'm going to say like, it's pretty deep. I'm going to say like Woodinville, right?
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I left early and I was like, you know what? That's the hike. Yeah. No, I left early to go shoot, to go to this party, you know, and I'm not, I mean, let's be honest. I got pretty trashed that night. Right. And I slept in the car, couldn't drive, you know, safety first. And I woke up at 11 and I was like, you know, time to go home. I'm just going to go home, rest, you know, cure this hangover. I get home and Note's like, hey, you need to do audio. And I'm like, what? Right. And he's like, I need music. I need sound effects. I need all this. And I'm like, what? And then he's like, yes, please. And I'm like, fine. Right. And so I'm like, you're like, not knowing exactly what I'm doing, but I'm just like thinking, hey, this can opening sounds cool. This hiss sounds cool. It's plopping in right here. And you know what? The thing that makes it so amazing for me is we ended up winning like best sound, best music, best audio on that one. And then I just think to myself, I was just hung over that day before, you know, like, and I'm like, God, you know,
maybe you're just super sensitive, you know.
Hey, you
the
know,
hangover gave you kind of a spidey sense for sound.
Maybe.
That was amazing work from that. I was like, wow, very impressive, very fast too. There's not a lot of time for him to do that. So I was like, wow.
And that's
the
audio awards are fairly prestigious in the 48 because audio, post audio in particular, is kind of the Achilles heel internationally. It's the hardest thing to get done to the same level that you can with cinematography and color grading and editing, because post audio is typically the last thing that's always done on a film. So getting noticed by an audio professional for your audio work is, it's one of the, I think, one of the more prestigious 48 awards.
That was awesome.
There you go. Oh, you know, I had a fantastic time. At the end of it, kind of going back, it's just about a lot of like growing and self-growth, connection mm-hmm. and just, you know, but keeping having fun, right? You're having fun. Like, I enjoy finding, like, certain music, too. I don't know how all of us edit, but I like to find music and then edit because it just fits the groove better, right? And so, like, he was like, here's kind of the story. And I'm like, okay, how would that story make me feel, right? How does this music make me feel that same way, right? Or does the sound effect emanate that, like, you know, car explosion or whatever, you know? So, but yeah, it was a fantastic, fantastic, like, experience being able to, like, you know, do the audio.
It's an important and often overlooked role in the 48 internationally. I mean, it hands down, it is the Achilles heel internationally. It's one thing that, you know, when you go to Filmapalooza, you instantly have this thing in common with everyone who's there. And another thing is post audio is a pain in the ass in 48 hours. All right. Nuke Note, do you have any?
You want me to go?
Yeah, can you go? There's just a lot of stories.
Let me do, but I'll clap.
Okay.
For the last one we did, I think 2020, we did Apparition. I think for whatever reason, we were like, this is such a great idea. Let's film it. Let's film seven scenes, entire scenes. And we filmed till like 5 a.m. Saturday. And I remember thinking, yeah, I think it might have been a little too much filming. and then when we filmed it and we were editing it together, I was like, man, this is so awesome. And it ended up being like 14 minutes. I was like, dang. So then we chopped it in half and threw it in there. But it became one of the projects we've been most proud of, period, no matter what. So that's why I loved it the most. But it reminds me of the first 48. And this was really funny. So we had a camera and a scratch audio on top. And then we had our own audio boom and audio recorder. And so then my brother's like, all right, everybody's really tired, Nuke. Why don't you get started? I open up the footage and then the audio. And I look at the footage. where's the audio scratch audio of the scratch audio was recorded.
Oh, yeah.
5 hours I had to look at people's mouths and which I think that's right. And so all night for the first night of editing, I was just editing and then trying to find the right audio file by visually.
And now you appreciate the slate clap more than anything else in the world. So I've had to do that. It is no fun.
So yeah, I was up pretty late that the first project, and it was well easy to remember that experience.
All right, no, give me something.
My favorite, I think something that really stands out, probably the one where we tried to, we were going to blow up a car and flip a car too, and then blow it up. And then we didn't have a car. So our friends got a car, a used car, brought it to Sumner. And then we just spent hours trying to do the single scene. And then by the time we found out that we couldn't do it, we had to pivot. Nuke and Nut came up with a brilliant idea to be able to basically shoot a 48 at 7 p.m. You know, we really started shooting Saturday at 7 p.m.
Oh my God.
Yeah, we're like, oh, this is terrible. And so we just threw out the whole script. They came up with this brilliant pivot, and Nuke really took charge on that and directing that, came up with brilliant ideas and making it work. And by the time we did it, I think we ended at 2, 3 a.m. because we knew we needed to edit it. So we're just like, we just have to chop it off. They both edited, created this really pretty fantastic film. And I think that the problem was someone said the line incorrectly with one word swap. And so all of that, just we got disqualified for that. And we're like, I remember, I think you texted me. I was like, no. Okay. And then seeing it on the big screen, I was like very acutely aware of when you said, hey, this is going to be a problem. And I was like, and I didn't tell anyone until the screening right after. And I said, we're disqualified. And they're like, no, the line was said that way. I'm like, no, that's not how it's supposed to be said. And I remember thinking, watching the whole thing, thinking, I'm going to dread this. But then watching it and seeing everyone's faces and how much pivoting was done and how much camaraderie was brought onto set, that really just was worth it too.
Yeah, yeah. Probably that's, you know, there are people who know that they got something wrong or just ran into difficulties every year with a couple of teams. I have to really go into cheerleader mode. It's like, hey, yeah, don't give up.
Keep going.
Finish what you have. You know, you and your cast and your crew all deserve to see something up on the big screen. And that's, you know, amazing. How the crowd is at a 48 screening. Everyone is there for everyone else. Yeah. It's a community affair, and everyone wants to cheer for your film.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. You gotta, it's a great experience, and just, you guys know, you know, so much socializing goes on the sidewalk outside the theater after the screenings. To the point where like Chris and I will be like, all right, we need to go. The theater is gonna call the cops. No, they'd never say that, but but the socializing goes on, you know, amongst relative strangers, you know, for a long time after the screenings. And I think anyone who is doubting themselves or doubting what they make over the weekend, even if it's late, you know, turn it in. Go have that experience in the theater. And you know, I never like informing someone that their film is disqualified. That just sucks.
Yeah.
And the line of dialogue is the number one disqualification. It's universally, it is the number one disqualification, with the prop and character kind of tied for second. But yeah, it's never fun telling someone they're disqualified. And especially, you know, if it's someone that, like you guys, that I know well after all of these years, like, oh, sorry, your film's got the line of dialogue wrong.
Yeah.
That's a tough call. It's, you know, it breaks my heart every time.
It is. That's the one you got to learn.
But it didn't deter you.
No,
keep it doing not. It.
No.
All right. Well, Nope, Nuke and Nut, thank you so much. You know, honored to have you on the show, and I can't wait to see what you do again this year, especially with the new, you know, familial approach. I'm interested in seeing what that produces. I'm sure it's going to look great, and it's going to be a good watch. So thank you. And, you know, I'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
We'll see you then.
Thank you. Appreciate
it. Great day.
Thank you.
48 hours to go. If you're looking for a hero, then this is the show. Where did they come from? What do they know? It's an origin story. Let's go.
48 Hour Heroes Origin Stories is a production of Media Without Borders, the Seattle 48 Hour Film Project, and Heads Up Productions.